Hi, I'm Jeff Franke, Editorial Director of Manufacturing.net and Manufacturing Business Technology. Welcome to Security Breach. There's a reason the term industrial grade is used to express the highest levels of reliability and durability for products. After all, if a material, technology, or tool can handle the rigors and demands of manufacturing, chances are it can meet the needs of any other application. We've been through these facts before, but they're worth repeating. IBM has cited manufacturing as the number one target for cyber attacks. The FBI is expecting a 400% increase in phishing attacks, and the average ransomware attack demand has tripled in the last 2 years. It's fair to say that these attacks will continue to get more complex and occur even more frequently in the industrial sector. So, it would stand to reason that being able to handle the constant onslaught of various and increasingly complex cyber attacks that the industrial sector faces would make the strategies and software successfully implemented by these enterprises a model for countless other industries, institutions, and individuals to emulate. One of the companies looking to enhance all these vitally essential cybersecurity protocols for the most important sector of our global economy is Rockwell Automation. And joining us today is Quade Nettles, Cybersecurity Product Manager at Rockwell Automation. Quade, thanks so much for joining us today. Kind of jumping right into things, when we look in the industrial sector, we see vulnerabilities from a cybersecurity perspective on the IT, of course, but more and more on the OT side. What are some of the bigger vulnerabilities that you continue to see with a lot of the industrial folks that you're working with?
Yeah, I would say one of the common scenarios we hear our customers talk about a lot is they have a lot of legacy infrastructure that they've inherited, maybe through acquisitions, maybe through mergers, that has just been around for a really long time. And they always face with the challenge of, you know I need to migrate because I have things that are, they're no longer supported by our vendors, right? Like the customers are still running things like Windows XP or Windows 2000, Windows ME. You'd be surprised how much of that's out there. But even just not in the like server space, there's customers I know that has Rockwell software, Rockwell applications that were manufactured, you know, dozens of years ago that Rockwell doesn't even support anymore. And the customers need to ask themselves, I know there are vulnerabilities associated with this. I know Rockwell isn't patching it anymore, but I just don't have the time or the outage windows to migrate it. So inherently, right, they're faced with those vulnerabilities because of that legacy infrastructure that they're trying to build, you know, migration and mitigation plans for.
So we hear that quite often in terms of some of these older systems that are in place. Does replacing it become an investment issue or just a knowledge-based dynamic? Which is the bigger prevailing issue there, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's productivity versus security, right? I mean, a lot of times they're making decisions based on, you know, I have on one hand, I have the existential security threat of this system being the threat vector, right, that someone compromises to bring me down. And on the other hand, I'm trying to make X product to hit my bottom line, right, to get this out the door. So in order to do a lot of these security projects, I'm going to need to take these systems down, right? So if I take these systems down, I'm not going to make product that's going to affect my bottom line. And what is my return on investment going to be for the security project, right? So you have plant managers and those that, you know, again, what manufacturing is what, you know, creates their paychecks, right? And security just sounds like work. So they're always having that back and forth of, you know, do I really want to do the security project or should I do this other productivity throughput project that means I'm going to make more product, which is what I care about the most.
So what ends up being the factor that sort of pushes them forward that they have to get these things done? Is it waiting till something bad happens or is the market getting a little bit more progressive in their planning?
Yeah, unfortunately, you would be surprised how many of the customers I've spoken to are only reacting based on someone in their industry being impacted. A lot of times it's like, you know, it's like insurance to them, right? Like, you know, you need it, but you don't really know you need it until you actually have to go call it for it, you know? So they're seeing threats happen in there, and it's not just cybersecurity threats, right? They actually see them happening in their vertical, right? Because, you know, a food and bev customer may see something happen in automotive or life sciences, they may say, oh yeah, they're not looking at us. But when they see another manufacturer in their same industry be impacted, that really when they start to understand, hey, they are actually targeting me. It's not just government, it's not just critical infrastructure. They care about my environment as well. So I should actually start taking, you know, measures to improve it. And then a lot of times once that conversation happens, that's when you start getting that senior level buy-in and then, you know, the ball gets rolling.
Interesting. So part of that too is becoming more proactive almost out of necessity, but also becoming proactive. And part of being proactive, I guess, is developing a good plan, putting a plan in place. When you're working with some of these companies, these manufacturers, What are some of the first steps you recommend taking in putting together a plan that not only identifies what you need to do, but also offers some response dynamics as well?
Yeah, the first step we tell all of our customers is you need to go get a full asset inventory, right? I think a key phrase we say a lot of times is you can't protect what you don't see. And we kind of describe that as like visibility, right? If you're thinking of the NIST framework, the first step in that is identify. But a lot of times customers may just think of identify as, you know, I know what I have, right? But it's more than just knowing what you have. It's knowing things about what you have and knowing how what you have operates, right? So do you know model numbers, firmware numbers? Do you know protocols? Do you know where it's located at? Do you know who talks to who? Do you know when they talk, right? Do you know who uses it, right? Like, you need to know every intricate detail, because it's those details that allow you to build a plan to support it. And then it also allows you to understand when something out of the norm is happening within that asset, that could become the indicator of compromise or indicator of attack. So the first thing we tell our customers is, hey, go get an inventory, understand your asset base. And then with that, you know, build a business continuity plan, do a risk assessment, right? Understand what your risk tolerance is, because doing cybersecurity programs is not a one size fits all, which works for one customer may not work for next. So until you've done that risk assessment and you've kind of understood what your risk tolerance is, then you're able to build a plan to say, okay, how do I address my threats and my risk and kind of, you know, look at all the different areas that I can do? Because there are a lot of different options for cybersecurity improvement plans, right? There's managed services with a partner, there's IDS technology, there's process training, right? There's so many things you can do. And a lot of times a customer trying to figure out what's best for them. And in order for you to do that, you kind of need to have that foundational understanding of what your biggest threats in your environment are.
I'm glad you brought up the term risk tolerance. That's kind of interesting to me because it can be subjective, and that can be very dangerous in terms of putting together these plans, especially when you're looking at potentially investing or upgrading equipment and patching it. From your perspective, when it comes to risk tolerance, how would you sort of propose that to people in terms of determining it and putting some parameters around it so it's not too loose and it's not an excuse, essentially?
Yeah, I think a good way to have that conversation is to use a framework like IEC 62443, which has within the 4.2 area of a description of putting assets within a security zone, right? And when you put assets in security zone, you're able to then start grouping them based on who needs to work together in order to maintain operations. So you have those security zones, right? You're inherently going to build areas of priority, right? You're going to have different lines, right, that you're probably going to group together. And you may have a filling line, you may have a packaging line, and you may have a production line, right? And then as you start to look at that, that'll be an easy way for you to categorize and say, which of these lines could I afford to have go down, but not essentially cripple my operations, right? So yeah, it's those type of conversations that we have our customers ask themselves to say, if you're going to look at different plants, right? You may have a plant that nets $1 billion a year, and you may have a plant that nets $100,000 a year, right? If you're prioritizing which plant to invest in, you're likely going to want to choose the manufacturing facility that's the one that's making the most critical products to your bottom line, right? So look at the different areas of your manufacturing, right? The different lines you have, look at different facilities you have, and then ask the question of, you know, if I need to invest funds and I need to determine what areas that I need to impact the quickest, you know, that kind of helps you understand your risk tolerance of what plants, what lines you can afford to not impact now, and then start making some of those business decisions.
No, it makes a ton of sense. And when you're putting together these plans and identifying your risk tolerance and other things of that nature, one of the dynamics within manufacturing that always becomes complicated is who's involved. Now, these silos between IT and OT, we're getting better at blending them, but there's still a bit of conflict there. In your experience in working with manufacturers, what is the right mix? What should these teams look like in putting together these plans and really tackling cybersecurity as such a critical issue?
Yeah, the most successful companies have a cross-functional team, right? You can't do it where it's just IT working in an IT silo and OT working in an OT silo, because inherently they conflict. And there is a need for both sides to work together because both sides need each other in order to be successful, right? The OT side, a lot of times threats begin in the IT area and then propagate the way to OT, right? And then in the OT environment, you're having a lot of data that sometimes needs to flow into IT in order to give visibility to different enterprises, right? Help others do their job, right? So in order for you to build a plan that addresses the needs of both sides, they need to speak a common language and they need to work together. So when we're looking at, say, the three tenets of people, process, technology, from the people perspective, you're going to want to have a team comprised of OT stakeholders, IT stakeholders, right? You're going to need senior level leadership, right? All of them coming together. And if you're having business meetings or alignment meetings, right? Everyone needs to have a voice and be aligned to the same page. Because, you know, when companies have IT being the only ones running different prerogative, they kind of push IT policy down, and then OT inherently has conflict. And then when it's OT only, OT only cares about productivity a lot of times, and then they're not valuing the security aspect that IT cares about, right? So it's important that we always advise, hey, make sure you're bringing in voice from both sides, make sure everyone's heard, and then I think that's when you have the most success.
Well, it seems like to get a really good response to any of these types of attacks, those two entities really need to not only work together, but understand what the other is doing and what their reach is. How are you seeing that in working with these companies? Is IT understanding OT better and vice versa? Are they becoming more embedded, or is it still a bit too siloed?
I think it's gotten a lot better. I mean, I think the strides that have happened in that relationship between those two different entities now in 2022 is probably much better than it was, say, in 2010, because of the visibility of how many cyber attacks have happened. And there were, and the cause of some of those cyber attacks being that disjointed approach between IT and OT. And I think IT has now recognized that there is a trend of a lot of attacks happening from the IT side, and then that moving its way into OT and then ultimately stopping operations. And then IT understanding that, hey, OT is ultimately who are responsible, right? They are the ones that actually know how the processes work. I think a lot of times when I'm speaking to IT individuals, they will admit, I don't know a lot about how we make product, right? I don't know a lot about why this OT machine needs to communicate on a protocol like SMB that we know is unsecure. And in my mind, right, just patch it and walk away. But then they tell me we can't patch because something may break, right? And I think a lot of times IT didn't understand like the inherent risk of just patching things, because in IT, you just patch everything, right? You're not worried about a machine stopping and the danger that could cause, right? So I think that communication and all the cybersecurity becoming so much more on the forefront has helped build that relationship. And now a lot of times, most of my customers, they do have a collaborative team, right? And there is more of a desire to understand each other's perspective, because ultimately that's what is needed in order to have success.
Quaid, are you seeing, you know, we talked about response because there's a plethora of different types of attacks really targeting the industrial sector right now. And we've seen that ramp up so much over the last couple of years. Is there anything in particular that you're seeing that's a new threat or something that you're seeing in greater quantities, whether it be an organization, a type of tactic, or a place that they're going after? Anything new that you're seeing there that's really kind of lighting up your radar?
I would say, well, one thing that's definitely concerned me in the past year or so was things that I've seen in the supply chain, right? And then in the supply chain, but then not actively acting on that foothold immediately, but then laying dormant for a period of time, just kind of doing recognizance before they actually even act on it, right? Thinking of like SolarWinds, right? The SolarWinds attack, they had a foothold in SolarWinds for 14 months before it was even discovered, right? And SolarWinds is a key enterprise player across many different industries and many different verticals, right? I mean, there's obviously SolarWinds is a big player in this space, right? So having a vulnerability being a tool like SolarWinds that was there for 14 months before even was discovered, I mean, how much infiltration and stealing of data were they able to get, you know, how much did they learn, right, over that period of 14 months? So thinking of that and then how it, you know, could be the next SolarWinds, right? I mean, obviously those are some of the biggest threats, because once you have a tool like that in the supply chain, I mean the reach you can get from that is paramount, right? So I mean, that's one. The second one is just everything you're seeing now with tampering with like the food and bev and wastewater and things like that, where the like loss of life and poisoning is always a threat, right? Like that wastewater attack that happened in Florida, where they tampered with the valves and, you know, the water for that community was going to be impacted had they not caught it when they did. I mean, when you think about how it starts to move into real life, like the Colonial Pipeline and the gas on the Eastern Seaboard, and then like in that wastewater attack, now it's not just, you know, a company that makes billions of dollars having to pay a ransom. It means that now my grocery store is having a food shortage, or I can't get gas to fill up my car, right? Or my water, you know, those type of things. Now it's impacting the everyday, you know, person that doesn't even think about cybersecurity if they didn't know these things. So as a manufacturer, right, you mean, we understand that a lot of this happens, you know, and before it even hits the consumer. And it's how we protect the manufacturing. So again, having to make sure we're prepared for that and we're building solutions for it is definitely some things I think about.
Yeah, and I think that all ties back to what you said initially too, when you put together that plan, starting with just understanding everything that could come under attack, just getting an inventory of all of your assets right there. I think that's why that's so important, and remembering all of those little things, because boy, to lay dormant within a system, especially something as critical as a supply chain right now for that long, that's terrifying. And especially when you see where that could go, not only back to the host organization, but so many others as well. Quade, we initially connected down at Automation Fair. Rockwell was doing some really interesting demonstrations in terms of sort of a dummy attack on an ICS and proper responses and things that you were showing people how they could do to respond to this type of attack. Maybe you could kind of walk us through a little bit of that in terms of what you're trying to accomplish and demonstrate down there.
Yeah, so we had a pretty good demonstration at Automation Fair. I thought it was really interesting. We actually built a red team and blue team type scenario where we had a red team individual from Rockwell that had actually created a cyber attack. They loaded it on a mobile device that was acting as if it was a Raspberry Pi, right? So it was actually like a little computer on a USB stick. And when they plugged that USB in, right, you can kind of see it start, you know, acting as if it was malware. And then on the blue team, right, we actually had a team member that was actually monitoring the threat, and they were able to identify when it happened, right? So on the red team, we have an individual that's, you know, acting as an attacker, right? They now have the entry point into the network. They were creating fake accounts. They were escalating privileges. They had actually even went into an HMI, tampered with the temperature on the HMI and created a fire, right? Actually showing the way something could be tampered with once someone has infiltrated your network. And then again, we have the blue team that was allowing a lot of it to happen for the sake of the demonstration, but also in real time, detecting those different steps they were taking. Like, hey, we can see the new asset in the network. We can now see that they've escalated privileges. We can now see that they've moved to this machine and we see what they're doing. We've actually now detected a vulnerability like Bluekeep or something like that, right? We're showing how our team can then detect those threats. And then with that knowledge of detecting it, we would then be able to escalate that to our customers and then assist our customers with removing that threat from the network, right? So for us, it was a very good demonstration because that's actually a service that Rockwell now offers a lot of our customers in terms of that 24/7 service. So a lot of times what our customers are faced with is once they've made the decision to deploy a new technology in their environment, whether that be a firewall, whether that be an IDS tool, whether that be any type of technology that creates data, someone needs to monitor that data to uncover when something looks to be suspicious, right? So it doesn't matter how many firewalls I put in my environment or what I'm monitoring, if the data that comes out of it just lands in a database and no one's looking at it, right? So having a team behind the scenes that are monitoring that data, monitoring all that telemetry, looking at things that seem to be anomalies or look to be malicious, and then taking that data and saying, okay, I have uncovered something that looks suspicious, right? Based on the different factors I see, time of the event, sequence of event, the different corresponding events around it that all kind of correlate together, I'm able to build a profile for what's happening and then go to our customer and say, hey, these are the recommended next steps you should take to really mitigate this risk, right? And that's paramount because, as we said earlier, right, a lot of our customers lack the domain expertise in the OT environment, right? They don't know how a lot of processes work. And then if they do, they don't really have anyone to understand the cyber steps you should take to mitigate risk associated with these without, again, disrupting production if not needed. So having that nice demonstration, showing it in real time, how an attack can happen and how we demonstrate it was a very positive showcase. And I thought we got a lot of positive feedback about it.
It was incredible. It was awesome. And what I really appreciated was the scope of everything that was being monitored and the response. There was a plan. The plan was followed. The sky wasn't falling. It allowed people to react in a very... In a way that you would react to any other type of production disruption. In the way it was very impressive. One of the things that you just brought out there that I'd like, hopefully you can go into a little more detail, is you said some of the profiles that you would establish. And we talked a little bit at the show about the algorithms that are attached to those. And I understanding this is most likely what's going on. This is why we think this is going on and so forth. Could you maybe dive in a little bit more deeply there and talk about those profiles a little bit?
Yeah, so I would say if you talk to anybody that's in the MSSP space, right, where they're monitoring live environments for customers, they're going to have a way that they can identify things that are actionable, right? And actionable is a key term because in the space, again, where you have all this data, you can kind of get inundated with a lot of data that just is noise, right? And whenever someone has a lot of noise, they get what we call alert fatigue, where if everything that comes out of an environment is critical, then nothing's critical, because you're just getting all this, like, I don't know what I should respond to, what I should not. So what our team has built is these profiles that kind of manifest themselves in the playbooks that kind of say, based on this type and this time and this frequency and the different TTPs being tactics, techniques, or procedures that these threats or adversaries tend to take, these are these times where this now rises from being just an alert to being something that's called an insight that actually can now mean action needs to be taken. So what we've doing is we tuck in, obviously, the expertise that Oracle Automation has and how OT systems work, how they communicate. And then we've taken a lot of the cyber expertise that we have from some of our acquisitions that you would have met at Automation Fair from these teams based in Israel and Barcelona, where they have now say, hey, we know the different techniques that an adversary takes, right? We know that if they take access of this asset, the next thing they're going to do is try to create an account, and they're going to escalate privileges, and they're going to take a foothold, and they're going to move here. You know, and when you have that information, right, you have that continuous feed of threat intelligence, you're able to kind of predict what that next step is, right, and then kind of, you know, take the mitigating measures to stop it from happening, right? So all of that is then built into our playbooks and our service, so that when we're detecting these threats and we're weeding out that noise, we're then taking that back to our customers saying, hey, we've detected this type of activity. It seems to be an indicator of compromise or indicator of attack. We now know who we think it is and what we should do. And then we're guiding our customers through that step-by-step process, right? So we don't want to just be, again, like a smoke detector telling you when there's a problem. But we also want to be the firefighter, right, that comes in and helps you put it out, right? And we've kind of baked that all that into the service.
That was a very impressive demonstration. Appreciate you kind of walking through that a little bit. You know, one of the things too that we've been talking about is understanding all of these different areas, all these different vulnerabilities, where IT fits in, where OT fits in. But then when you know, a couple of the attacks you referenced, really it came down to credentials. And when you're talking about credentials being stolen, that comes down to individual protections. Cybersecurity is almost becoming just like a lot of other safety information. We know it's important, but it can become white noise in the background. In your experience, Quaden, working with manufacturers, is there a way that we can get people to really buy in more strongly to a lot of these cybersecurity initiatives and understand that stuff like Zero Trust and DFA, it's not there to make your life harder. There's a real tangible need for it.
No, and I'm glad you said that, because I think a lot of times people think of cybersecurity as just technology, right? It's like, okay, tell me what my problem is. Again, can I put a firewall in? Can I install an antivirus? You know, what can I do to solve my problem and then move on, right? And again, as I said earlier, right, cybersecurity is more than just technology, right? I said that the three tenants, right? There's people in process as well. So what I saw a lot of companies that instituted is they're doing like yearly required training, right, for their people. Because the people are vulnerability, right? Like, as I mentioned earlier, right? Legacy systems are vulnerability, but the actual employees are vulnerabilities too, right? Like, if you have an employee that is doing things that are, we call insiders, right? Insider could be doing things intentionally malicious, right? But there are employees that do things unintentionally, right? They don't know that they're being, that email was a phishing attack, right? They don't know that this individual talking to them is social engineering them only to learn information about them, right? They don't know that if that USB device that they should never plug in because they don't know where it belongs to, they plug it in anyway, right? So we always are working with our customers, not just to institute technologies and services, right? But it's also, how can we build programs to train your staff to bring up the competency of your teams to be more knowledgeable of general best practices when it comes to security, right? Instituting stronger password requirement rules, right? Instituting training guidelines, right? Learning how you identify phishing email, right? And things like that, right? It's that rudimentary type training that helps bring up the overall organization's knowledge that becomes more important even before we start talking about, again, firewalls and things like that to implement from a technology perspective. So I think, again, as I said earlier, I think a lot of customers understand that now, right? And they're not just thinking of security in terms of technology. They are thinking in terms of the processes I need to put in place and the training I need to put in place for my people. And ultimately, that's helping to improve their overall cybersecurity posture.
Awesome. A lot of solutions in there, and a lot of it's not as complicated as people think. So great points. Wrapping things up here, Quaden, when we look out for the next year, year and a half, are there any trends that you're seeing that you think are really going to come to the forefront, whether it's good or bad, some things that we should be aware of going forward?
Yeah, I think two big buzzwords for you that you may hear all the time, things like Industry 4.0, things like digital transformation. If you think about how much manufacturers are now moving into things like predictive maintenance, artificial intelligence, there's so much more that is moving to the cloud, right? Because they are seeking that increased productivity, increased throughput that you can get by having more things be digitized and more things that can you do speed computing by moving that into more of the edge, right? Closest to where it's developed at. And because of that, that attack service is widening, right? Like, you know, as more things move into the cloud, more ports, more communications that makes that possible, you're giving obviously adversaries more of an opportunity to discover vulnerabilities within that attack chain that can then be the reason that you know, a vulnerability occurs, right? So, you know, that is something that I know, you know, again, I don't think it's an if, but it's a win, right? As more of those cloud computing type elements start to get with our customers, right? You're probably going to see certain verticals be slow to the curve, right? You're probably going to see more pharmaceutical, more validated environments where there's a lot more change control be slower to adopt that. But I think there are other industries that are not as stringent in some of those type things that, you know, that's going to become more prevalent. And that's going to be a lot of things that you're going to see a lot of manufacturers trying to address in terms of, I can make, you know, twice as much product because I can get more data if I have more AI and more previous maintenance, but I've had to move more to the cloud. But then how do I protect my cloud data to ensure I don't have any, you know, critical information, any, you know, IP loss as a result of that?
Thanks, Quaid. For more information on the work Rockwell does, you can go to rockwellautomation.com. Thanks for joining us today. And to catch up on past episodes, you can go to manufacturing.net, IEN.com, or MBTMag.com. You can also check Security Breach out wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Amazon, and Overcast. And if you have a cybersecurity story or topic that you'd like to have us explore on Security Breach, you can reach me at jeff@ien.com. For Quaid Nettles, I'm Jeff Ranke, and this is Security Breach. Hi, I'm Jeff Franke, Editorial Director of Manufacturing.net and Manufacturing Business Technology. Welcome to Security Breach. There's a reason the term industrial grade is used to express the highest levels of reliability and durability for products. After all, if a material, technology, or tool can handle the rigors and demands of manufacturing, chances are it can meet the needs of any other application. We've been through these facts before, but they're worth repeating. IBM has cited manufacturing as the number one target for cyber attacks. The FBI is expecting a 400% increase in phishing attacks, and the average ransomware attack demand has tripled in the last 2 years. It's fair to say that these attacks will continue to get more complex and occur even more frequently in the industrial sector. So, it would stand to reason that being able to handle the constant onslaught of various and increasingly complex cyber attacks that the industrial sector faces would make the strategies and software successfully implemented by these enterprises a model for countless other industries, institutions, and individuals to emulate. One of the companies looking to enhance all these vitally essential cybersecurity protocols for the most important sector of our global economy is Rockwell Automation. And joining us today is Quade Nettles, Cybersecurity Product Manager at Rockwell Automation. No, very interesting. Yeah, definitely something that we have to continue to monitor and look forward to, all those Industry 4.0 connection points as well. And again, going back to one of the first things you said, getting an inventory of all that stuff to protect all of those different places the data is going and where it's being shared. So great stuff, Quade. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Security Breach. Really appreciate it. If you want to find out a little bit more about what Quade and his colleagues at Rockwell are doing, you can go to rockwellautomation.com.
Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks so much. That was great. Tied it all together really well. That was fun. That was good. Michelle, if you're still on the call, basically the only other stuff that we'd be looking for would be like a headshot of Quaid. And if you do have any B-roll or images you wanted to share, we'll definitely take a look at that. We did go around. We spent a fair amount of time at Automation Fair just kind of going around the cybersecurity booth there and taking some footage. So, anything else you want to share would be great.
Okay, sounds great. Do you have anything that would be needed or, you know, anything in particular that you would want as far as images?
Other than the headshot, nothing else that we would definitely need. It's just whatever you have available and would like to share. Otherwise, we've got some stock stuff that we use, so it's not just seeing Quaid and I talking. You know, some other visuals is always good.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Fantastic job, Quaid.
No, thank you. This is nice. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Cool. All right. Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Yeah. Watched the last of that last night. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was telling Anna was looking for some stuff. I'm like, you know, it's a little campy and whatever, but man, it's just kind of fun to watch. I get a kick out of Johnny. I mean,
he was on Marin.
All right.
Yeah, Macho. Drop Macho. He's like, you know, it was kind of rough, like always being known as the kid from Karate Kid. But thank God, because years later I did the show called Cobra Kai, and it's completely different.
No. William Zabka, I appreciate him on there.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched that Bullet Train movie.
I can't believe that's on Netflix already.
Hell yes.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah, dude, that was great. I loved it. As soon as just how it started, I'm like,
No, it looks good.
Yeah, it was awesome. Amanda doesn't even like movies like that. She watched the whole thing. It was good.
All right.
All right, you are still...